This is Karen Lyle with Sailsport Talk. You will recall a few weeks ago, Ole Sal, our North Atlantic Ocean correspondent, told us about the sailing boats that are stuck in the Caribbean.
200 to 300 European yachts that have to be repatriated to their home countries, and that would be another 100 to 150 or 200 sailing yachts on the Cape Verde Islands, south of the Canary Islands, and on the Canary Islands themselves. So they all want to go back to Europe, to their home places, and at the moment they don't have the possibility to enter any harbors on their way home, which is about 2,000 to 3,000 nautical miles.
Ole was one of those captains sailing home to Germany looking for a safe harbor just as COVID-19 shut down all the ports.
Well, the whole thing started on Friday the 13th of March. I was coming with a sailing boat from the Canary Islands to the Madeiran archipelago, and we were sailing here for about a week or 10 days, and then suddenly on the Friday the 13th of March, there was a complete lockdown of all ports on Madeira. That was a decision of the regional government on Madeira. Actually, even before the Portuguese government had decided that. The main reason was that there was a lot of big cruise ships lying here in Funchal, Madeira, and they were really afraid that the cruise ship passengers would carry the virus into the island. The problem is that they have, in that shortness of time, they have not made any special regulations for sailing and cruising yachts. So that meant everything was completely closed, and it was very, very difficult for all those yachts who were on sea and who were not in any kind, you know, prepared for that. So there was a little bit upside down situation here, but now in the past 4 or 5 weeks, the lockdown was still kept alive. So sailing yachts are not allowed to enter harbors, but they are allowed to take diesel, water, and provision to anchor in front of the harbors and to anchor in anchorages on the island. That's one of the problems, that here the weather conditions are very quickly changing and the anchorage grounds are quite unsafe because they are rocky, meaning that all the yachts that are in transit now towards Europe or towards the African continent have no real safe harbor on the way, have to either cross in one tour and in one voyage or take the risk and anchor on the Azores Island or the Madeiran Islands.
Ole is in Funchal, Madeira now, and the ports are still closed. I have been in touch with him frequently, and this is his report today.
And now this initiative of safe havens and safe harbors has started to approach the national government with first open letters.
SailsportTalk.com has a section. Click on Captains in the COVID-19 pages, where you will find links to Ole Sal's Safe Havens and Harbors Facebook group. This is Karen Lyle with Sailsport Talk.
All right, thank you for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast, around the world on American Forces Radio Network. It's Tuesday at 9:40 a.m. out here in California, and that means SailsportTalk.com, and always co-hosting this segment with me is Karen Lyle, also at her home in the East Bay. How are you doing, Karen?
Chance to go out, out to the ocean on my boat this last weekend.
You got to go out on your boat. Okay, I think I caught the end of that. We do have a guest, so let's bring her in. It's Pia McDonald. Pia McDonald is an epidemiologist and the senior director of applied research at RTI International, 25 years of experience in this field of public health. And Pia, thank you so much. How are we dealing with the pandemic when it comes to the sailing world?
Thank you. Thank you for having me. So not being a sailor myself, I've had pretty minimal experience. I did some sailing in high school on the San Francisco Bay, but that's pretty much my experience with sailing. So I come to it more from the epidemiological standpoint of looking at disease and how it moves around the world and moves through populations. And interestingly, the history of infectious diseases and sailing goes back a very long time. So I suspect that boaters and sailors have more experience with the concepts that the general population today are having to learn intimately. So examples include isolation and quarantine. Those are things that go back deep into the history of sailing and ports. whereas those might be new terms for some of the more landlocked folk.
Dr. McDonald, why is COVID-19 so different from pandemics of the past?
Yeah, that's a good question. And many people ask me, as an infectious disease epidemiologist, is this really something worrying? Is this something I should be concerned about? Is the world overreacting to COVID-19? And I can tell you, in 25 years of doing infectious disease epidemiology, this has been one of the most frightening things that I have seen. And it's really something that continues to keep me up at night. And I can assure you that we are not overreacting at all, and here's why. The novel coronavirus that causes COVID-19 disease is a totally new to humans lethal pathogen. We're all susceptible to this virus, as far as we can tell, since we've not been exposed to it in the past. We also know that it moves from one person to another quickly and efficiently, and we're still trying to figure out exactly how it does this and under what circumstances. The other scary thing is that people can infect it before they even know they're sick. So that's called asymptomatic infection. And that means that someone can walk around, feel fine, and actually be spreading the virus from one person to another. The other scary thing is we don't have a vaccine. The earliest vaccines could possibly go into study in humans in early 2021. That means that they get studied in humans. We don't know, and we won't know for quite a while, if those vaccines work. So there's multiple different vaccine candidates, but if they work and when they work and when they can be produced in a way to actually make enough for various populations across the world, that also is very much to be determined. The other thing is we don't have effective therapeutics. So if someone gets sick, we don't have effective ways to necessarily treat them. And then there's still so much we don't know about the basics around transmission, epidemiology, clinical treatment, and other things. So that's a really terrifying place to be starting from. And that's what makes this pandemic particularly scary.
You mentioned ports and how in the old days, this is how, a lot of transmissions took place, is sailors bringing it in a lot of times unknowingly to a new place around the world. And, you know, we know the stories about being at sea and the privations and the starvation and the scurvy, and they didn't know why there was scurvy. And it turned out it was just a lack of vitamin C. And so a lot of these things in your field, people had to learn the hard way, and a lot of them were sailors, weren't they?
Yeah. So it was interesting. If you go back and even look at the word quarantine is actually derived from the Venetian dialect, and it refers to 40 days and comes from the early 1300s when all ships were required to lay anchor for 40 days prior to the crew being able to go on land. And that was to prevent the plague or the Black Death moving from boats into ports. And so that notion of quarantine and what that means, the sailors have been managing and working and figuring out how to live on ships isolated for 40 days in a port waiting. And that is a very new concept for a lot of people. But again, even the word goes back to the earliest days of trade and travel and boats.
Well, Dr. McDonald, right now, I'm just going to give you like a little a case that's happening right now in the world, is that there are maybe 200 to 500 boats that are in different parts of different oceans, in the Caribbean Sea and the Mediterranean and the Indian Ocean, that need to come home to Europe. And these are small boats. They're not coming all at the same time. They have sailors on them, and there's a hurricane season coming up. And in those hurricanes, those boats can be capsized, lives can be lost. And none of these sailors have had an opportunity to provision because they didn't know that COVID-19 was going to happen. Now, I realize that this is something where we're going to have a long-term planning that's going to happen for these coming years. But what types of things could a government or a port take into consideration you know, for these sailors who are coming in from your perspective and expertise?
Yeah, so this issue of boats and people moving around the world, and really not cruise ships, we're talking about smaller vessels. So there's issues from both sides. The people who are coming into port, they've been to other places, maybe not. Let's say they've been on the boat for 14 days and we know they're not infected with the coronavirus because they haven't shown symptoms for 14 days, which is the incubation period for the disease. So while they come into port, they're bringing themselves, but they're also bringing their sewage. So they're bringing their sewage into port, and that needs to be managed. There is knowledge that there could be virus shedding in sewage. So if they've been sick with COVID-19 or other diseases that can transfer via sewage, there is the issue of the sewage potentially being contaminated. But let's say that the people are fine and they come to port. If they're coming into a port where there is a lot of transmission of the virus within the community, it's quite dangerous to go on shore because they're susceptible, most likely, and the people on shore may or may not have the disease and the virus and be able to spread it to the people while they're getting gas or getting food in the stores and that type of thing. Nonetheless, there's got to be a safer way to do that kind of business because boaters are experiencing the same thing that people living on land are experiencing in terms of needing to get provisions to bring them home. So I think moving forward, grocery stores and gas stations and other essential services are working very hard in the various countries to figure out how to do business almost as usual, but with these interventions in place to minimize risk to both those who need to come into the stores or get those services, as well as to protect the employees of those establishments. We're going to have to get creative and think out of the box on how to do that kind of stuff safely. So I think boaters have similar issues as the general population living on land, and it's a new way we're going to have to do business for a while.
When you know, there's a lot of blame game going on right now, which is probably counterproductive. We should put all our focus into stopping this right now. But as someone who's been doing this your whole career, and you've seen Ebola and the avian flu, SARS, Zika, all this stuff, could you see this coming, or could you at least see we're not going to be ready for this if it hits in earnest like this?
Yeah, so I've worked for a long time in public health preparedness, both domestically and internationally. And all of us who work in this field know that, you know, just the same, if you live in California, you know there will be a next big earthquake. We know that. There's no way around that fact. We hope that that's going to not happen, and we use a lot of denial to convince ourselves that we'll be safe if it happens. The same is true of pandemics. We know that there are certain very dangerous pathogens that we do not have effective treatment or vaccines. Those include things like MERS, which is the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, which is a coronavirus as well. We know that. We know this Nipah virus, loss of fever. And there have been NGOs and government consortiums who are working on developing vaccines for those. Because there's diseases that don't impact a lot of people, a lot of pharmaceutical companies and, you know, vaccine manufacturers are not interested in those. Coronavirus really comes out of nowhere because, I shouldn't say nowhere, coronaviruses were thought to be innocuous because they do cause traditional colds during the winter season. So 10 to 30% of all winter colds come from various forms of coronavirus. Those are not thought to be lethal. But SARS is a coronavirus and MERS is a coronavirus, and those popped up in the 2000s. And those were the first instance of a deadly, lethal-to-human coronavirus. And now we're seeing the next iteration on that. There's a lot of things about this virus that are surprising. And the fact that it is so new and so widespread is really what's upending our public health system. So in an outbreak or an epidemic where it happens in one place like Ebola in West Africa, the rest of the world was able to support the response to Ebola in West Africa because we didn't have that going on in our countries. But in this situation where it's a pandemic and it's impacting all countries pretty much at the same time, we're not being it's very hard to help others. And we're all scrambling for the same equipment, like the personal protective equipment, like masks and hospital caps and gowns and respirators. We're all scrambling for the same stuff. And there's issues with the supply chain. Most pharmaceutical products and even treatment, the ingredients in most of our pharmaceuticals come from China and India. So when their supply chain is disrupted, that has a ripple out effect on the rest of the world in terms of us being able to do healthcare as we know it. So there's those kind of issues that are very dangerous. But I would have thought, I thought our next big challenge as a global community was actually going to be some form of pandemic influenza. So influenza is one of those that we have seasonal influenza that's more traditional. Sometimes it can have a higher fatality rate than other years. But we have a vaccine for that. It's not always effective, but there are new forms of influenza that get mixed and matched with animals and humans mingling together. I thought the pandemic would be that. I thought the most next lethal pandemic would be one in the form of influenza. So the fact that it was the coronavirus, that is a surprise to me.
Fascinating stuff from Dr. Pia McDonald, Senior Director of Applied Research at RTI International. Doctor, thank you so much for your time and what you're doing for all of us. And hopefully we'll maybe catch up in a better time.
Thank you. And thanks for calling an epidemiologist to ask these kind of questions.
Karen, just in 10 seconds, how was your jaunt out on the bay?
I had 5 hours playing out in the ocean on beautiful swells that were far apart and pleasant right before the fog came in. So I was able to get back inside the gate before the fog came.
All right, Karen, thank you. We'll talk to you next week at salesporttalk.com.
Bye-bye.
I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back.